Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go fly.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Procedures.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go fly.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
This is Space Talk, a weekly program that highlights America's space program and what's new in space flight from around the globe. And now, with the past, present, and future of space exploration, here is Jim Behnke.
Greetings from Florida's Space Coast, home of the most skilled aerospace workforce in America. I'm Jim Behnke, and this is the January 5th, 2013 edition of Space Talk, live on the air right here on WMMB. Well, Happy New Year to you and yours as we begin yet another orbit within our solar system. And return today with a fresh Space Talk program in which we will spend the next hour, as usual, discussing all things related to our space program. Hope you had a great holiday last couple of weeks and enjoyed some best of Space Talk editions. We're new with the program today. My guest today in the studio will be my good friend Adrian Lafitte, a former Atlas launch director, recently retired from Lockheed Martin. Who's stopping by to share some stories about his career, talk about some of the space education initiatives underway here on the Space Coast, and generally just pass the time. It's be a good hour here today. In a moment, we're going to get you caught up on some of the interesting space-related developments that have taken place while we've been off during the past couple of weeks. Later on, we'll remind you when the next launch is scheduled from the Cape, and we'll hear Adrian's answers to the five questions that are part of our weekly feature, Terminal Count. Along the way, as always, we welcome and appreciate any thoughts, questions, or comments you might have about our space program. Give us a call, as always, by dialing 321-768-1240. Or if you prefer, you can send us an email. The address is spacetalking@aol.com. Okay, well, first off today, I want to spend a moment conducting a little business with you. If you are a regular listener, you know that Space Talk is made possible not only with the support of all the kind folks here at WMMB who are committed to recognizing the importance of the space program to this community, but we're also here thanks to the financial backing of a group of supporting sponsors, again, without whom there would be no Space Talk program. As you may know, these sponsors include Abacus Technology, Boeing, Lockheed Martin, Space Florida, SpaceX, and United Launch Alliance. Now, it was an early in 2012. Last year, each of these companies made a commitment to sponsor this program for 1 year, and it will soon be time to go back to these folks with my hat in hand and ask for their financial help for another year. As I make my case to these groups, I will share all the usual objective facts and figures about the show and its audience. But what would really be helpful to me is that if you are a regular listener and do enjoy listening to Space Talk each week here on WMMB, please, I would ask you to send me an email and let me know. Now, I'm not looking for quantity here. I'm not trying to say that, you know, hundreds and hundreds of people send an email, but And I won't be using any of these comments that you send me on the air or anything. That's not the point. But I just would like to gather some comments from listeners who appreciate the program, would like to see it continue for another year, and then share some of those comments with our program's sponsors. You can send your comments to me at the usual email address of spacetalking@aol.com, or you can tweet them at spacetalking. Or post a note on the Space Talk page on Facebook, and I would thank you very much for doing so. Okay, the business meeting is finished. We are adjourned. A few notable things happened during the past couple of weeks that when I heard about them, I thought to myself that I should probably say something about it when I came back from the holiday. So in no particular order, here are some things that went on that I thought were kind of interesting real quickly. Last month in December, SpaceX flew its Grasshopper space vehicle near Waco, Texas on a test flight. Now, Grasshopper is essentially a Falcon 9 first stage rocket that lifted off, hovered about, something like 100 feet above the ground, landed back on its pad during a 29-second flight. So it vertically takes off, hovers, and lands back down on the ground again using its rocket engine. It's the latest development in the company trying to develop a fully reusable rocket. Now, they still have a long way to go to make this idea work, that idea being that a Falcon 9 could lift off from the Cape, and when the first and second stage separate, the first stage comes back to the ground and lands back at the launch pad. It sounds very science fiction-y. Sounds like something out of Star Trek or Star Wars, but, you know, the first steps have been made in Waco, and we'll see how it goes. A lot of talk this past week or so about a study from the Keck Institute for Space Studies at Caltech studying an idea about capturing and moving a very small asteroid that's about maybe about 25 feet or so, capturing it from wherever it is in the orbit in the solar system and then moving it into an orbit around the moon. It's a very intriguing idea, but what's been more fascinating to me is the way that everybody's been grabbing onto it. It's another case of the media, I think, reporting what other news media are reporting. And then the next thing you know, it's gone from a study that someone from NASA has looked at to a story that says NASA is mulling over the plan to do this to a story that says NASA is on its way to doing this. Well, of course, the idea of capturing an asteroid and putting it in orbit around the moon is simply one of a dozens of neat ideas that we can consider for the future of our space program. But for now, NASA is pretty much keeping to their plan of building the Space Launch System, heavy lift rocket, the Orion space capsule, and sending that vehicle around the moon eventually and then perhaps further on out to an asteroid of Mars. We'll see how that develops in the weeks and months to come. Also recently, during the holidays, much being made about an interview that the BBC did with Neil Armstrong's brother, Dean. Neil's brother says that a few months before the moon landing in 1969, Neil came to him with an idea for what he might say when he stepped on the lunar surface. And the tabloids have been going crazy with the idea, especially in Great Britain, that, you know, Neil's claimed all these years that he made it up when he got to the lunar surface. So now we're seeing headlines that say Neil lied. Neil fibbed his way. Neil has scripted this thing long before he got here, before he got to the moon, and it's all just a bunch of craziness. And then, of course, did he say that's one small step for man, or did he say that's one small step for a man, which was what was intended, and Neil believed he said. It's just been a lot of fun to watch all this stuff happen. Of course, you know, in my opinion, Neil very likely came up with some ideas, shared a few with his brother, and then made his decision when he got to the lunar surface, as he said all along. Let's see. Also, Congress passed very recently, just in the last couple of days, the Space Exploration Sustainability Act, which basically says Congress still wants the Space Launch System and Orion to be built. And in a bit of interesting news, changed the law to allow NASA to continue buying Russian seats on the Soyuz rocket as a way to get to our astronauts to the International Space Station, as a backup should the commercial crew's effort be delayed for whatever reason. Russia's current contract with NASA ends in 2016, and this will allow NASA to continue buying seats for several years past that. Space Florida looking hard at a new commercial launch site north of Kennedy Space Center, very near or on the Brevard-Volusia County lines. I think we should pay close attention to this during the next few weeks and months to come. And in fact, we'll probably ask Adrian about it when we come back with him in a few moments. We should also keep an eye on what's happening in the New Mexico state legislature. There's trouble for Spaceport America out there. Talk of not extending a law that says that that if anything should go wrong during these early commercial space flights, these space tourism flights, the state would be clear of any liability. If the state does not extend that, Branson and Virgin Galactic have talked about leaving New Mexico and going somewhere else. Well, where could they go? Maybe Cape Canaveral. We need to keep an eye on all of that. So lots of stuff going on in space the last couple of weeks, even though it's been the holidays. Hey, when we come back after this first break, we're going to be joined by former Atlas Launch Director Adrian Lafitte, recently retired from Lockheed Martin, our good friend. Join us in the studio after this first break. I'm Jim Banky. You're listening to Space Talk on WMMB. We'll be right back. And welcome back, everyone, to Space Talk. 321-768-1240 is the number to call to participate in the program today. You can also send your question or comments in an email to spacetalking@aol.com. We also continue to solicit your comments about the program in general that we can share with our sponsors. Again, spacetalking@aol.com. My guest today in the studio is no stranger to this program or to our local space community, Adrian Lafitte, recently retired from Lockheed Martin after a distinguished career that included a very long and successful run as the Atlas launch director here at Cape Canaveral. He is a Debus Award winner from the National Space Club Florida Committee, a passionate supporter of space education, and among his many community involvements, recent chairman of the United Way campaign here on the Space Coast. Adrian Lafitte, welcome back to our program.
Thank you, Jim.
Well, and congrats.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. Congratulations on your retirement. What has it been like for you the last month or so?
It's actually been a lot of fun, and I didn't think I was going to be able to make the adjustment for being, like, working all the time, but I really have to say it's fun, and I'm having more time to do a lot of the stuff with the education that I've been more passionate about.
Now they always say that when you retire, you get busier. Have you been busier in your day-to-day life, or have you and Roz had a chance to kick back and relax?
Actually, that is very true. I've been busy doing a lot of the, like you mentioned, I'm wrapping up the United Way campaign. We just finished a very successful Ebibar Space Week. So I've been busy doing a lot of the volunteer stuff that I had time to do, but now I can put more time into
it. Yeah, that must be fun. So let's take it back here. We have had you on the program before. You have acted as a booking agent for this program quite a bit, it seems. It's like Adrian calls and says, I got an idea for a guest for you. And the Da Vinci Academy kids, my favorite. Alyssa, and all the gang there have been so much fun. But we've never had a chance to talk to you and hear your story and learn something more about you and your background. So tell us the secrets of Adrian Lafitte. How did you get here, and why have you involved your whole career in the space program?
Well, it's kind of interesting. When I first graduated from college, I have a degree in civil engineering and a master in structural engineering. And right out of college, I ended up working for McDonnell Douglas, working on airplanes.
Okay.
And during that time, my dad says, what does that have to do with civil engineering, which is more like buildings and, you know.
Were you in St. Louis?
No, actually in Long Beach, California.
In Long Beach,
California.
Okay.
So shortly after that, maybe a couple of years later, I got a call from then Mark Marietta that said they were building a launch pad at Vandenberg for the shuttle.
Slick six.
So then I said, hey, that's closer. I'm doing building. So that's how I ended up being on the program. So I worked at Vandenberg, and I designed a lot of the facilities for Slick Six. And right after the Challenger, that's when they decided that the Air Force said we're really not serious about a shuttle program, and I got transferred to Denver, where I started working on the expendable launch vehicle that became the Titan IV program.
Okay.
And oddly enough, then I spent the next 2 years flying back to the same place I moved from, which was Vandenberg Air Force Base, designing Slick 4 East.
Oh, for the Titan IV.
For the Titan IV program.
Okay.
And I worked Titan program, and then I moved through the Titan program through mechanical engineering, et cetera. And then in 94, I got moved here to Florida. And that's when Mark Marietta had bought General Dynamic, and they went and combined the two entities. And then a year later, we merged with Lockheed, and then
became Lockheed Martin. It's interesting that, you know, as you eventually wound up as an Atlas launch director, as a launch director of a launch vehicle, a lot of people might think that that you'd make that path would come from the vehicle side, that you'd get to know the rocket so well, and the next thing you got to do is launch it. But on the other hand, coming from the launch pad side and the integration and the ground facilities and all of that, what a neat merger of the concepts.
It was. And then I also did a lot of the ground mechanical support systems. And once I started doing that, then that's when the Atlas V was being thought about.
Sure.
And, of course, we were successfully flying the Atlas II, 2ASs, and Atlas III. So at the time, Forrest McCartney, rest in peace, asked me if I would be interested in doing the Atlas V program and then becoming the launch director for that. So I said, sure. So that's how I got involved with that. And then Cy Baker retired, and then Forrest says, well, why don't you just finish the Atlas II, Atlas III?
Right.
And that's how I ended up being the launch director.
So you were working on early planning for Atlas V before?
Yeah, we were working on the beginning of the Atlas V program. That's when we were in the heavy competition with Boeing.
Okay.
With the Delta IV, and obviously now we're a joint venture.
Right.
But at that time, it was a very competitive environment. So we had formed a team to go work the Atlas V. Then we were working the design for the launch pad, and that's how we came up with the clean launch pad concept. And from that, you know, I was slated to go off and follow the Atlas V program. And I said, Sai retire. And then I ended up launching the first Atlas III, finishing the Atlas II ASs, the Atlas III, and then starting the Atlas V.
When was the first launch? What was your first launch?
My first launch was the Atlas II, and it was in 1999.
So even... Okay, that does make sense to me then as I start putting the timeline together. Certainly Atlas V, you knew EELV was already in work. So that makes sense to me. So the Atlas II then, and I remember you're talking about moving to the Atlas V, how the Atlas II and then the 2AS with the solids, which I've never forgiven anybody for putting solids on the old Atlas rocket, although it did look pretty cool.
And it worked really good.
It worked really well. But then the Atlas III comes along, and what a great transition that was to the Atlas V. I remember as a news media guy, you were always talking about retiring risk, learning so much about how the Atlas III worked, and then using those systems as they transitioned to Atlas V. With, and this is what my question is, the Russian main engine.
Mm-hmm.
The RD-180. Talk a little bit about that. How do we wind up with a Russian engine at the bottom of an Atlas ICBM?
Well, as you know, we had John Karas, which is a very dynamic,
great, charismatic man.
He's one of those guys that has what I call a visionary, and he always wanted to improve upon our launch systems. And he got involved with the Russian, and oddly enough, when he went there, he realized that they had a great engine that they already had built and actually stockpiled. And one thing led to another, and that's how the Atlas III, I don't want to go to the extent that was designed on a napkin, but pretty much in that way.
Right.
And then the Atlas III had the RD-188 engine. Once we created the Atlas III, it was about 70% of the components on the Atlas III that helped develop the Atlas V. So once we flew the first Atlas III, we retired close to about 70% of all the risk involved with the Atlas V. And like I said, we were in a competitive environment, and one of the greatest things that we did was that we were able to launch the first Atlas V on the day we were going to say at the beginning of the window.
Yeah,
and that was a great accomplishment.
Day. Yeah, I remember that.
And I also remember it took 13 seconds for that vehicle to clear the lightning tower, so we were all going like, is this thing ever going to go up?
Okay, so you've retired. Now I got about 2 or 3 minutes before I break. I'm throwing you a curveball here. You've retired from Lockheed Martin. You're independent. You can tell the true story. For years, we've known that we had the Atlas V and the Delta IV. And those names came out very interesting in the timing because the Delta IV was announced as a Delta IV. And then suddenly we expected the Atlas. You had the Atlas II. You had the Atlas III. And we were expecting the Atlas IV. We expected the Delta IV and the Atlas IV. And you guys in Lockheed Martin came up with the Atlas V. And the story goes that you said it was an Atlas V because you were combining the heritage of your Atlas III and your Titan IV experience, so that made sense that you called Atlas V. But everybody knows, Adrian, that the real reason you named it the Atlas V is because it was one up over the Delta IV, and you thought that would be a great little jab at the Boeing folks. Tell me the truth.
And that is the truth. We always thought that we wanted to be one up, and Atlas V was a way to demonstrate that. And like I said, at the time, we did end up being the first to launch.
Yeah, yeah.
So we proved the Atlas V.
So another couple of minutes. Tell me, what's your favorite story from an Atlas II, Atlas III time frame?
I would say the most interesting part is that we were heading to, there was a hurricane that was heading down our way.
Right.
And we were in the middle of a launch countdown.
We talking about Andrew?
Yep. And we were on the pad.
Right.
And we did not know what to do, and we figured the best thing to do was to launch, and it happened to be an NRO mission.
Right.
And I remember clearly we launched, and it was about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
successfully launched, and then we go, great, and then immediately went into hurricane preparation.
Yeah.
So that was one of those, like, nail biters.
I remember that so clearly. We all thought for sure you're going to just – it was very much like Martin Caton's Maroon movie where they launched through the eye of the hurricane.
Yep.
We expected quite – you know, that this hurricane's going to hit, and will it get off on time or not? My favorite story about you, by the way, Atlas launch director, Adrian Lafitte's been so smooth and so calm. I remember after the Atlas space operation, well, we're gonna come up on a break here in just a minute, so I'm not going to be able to tell this whole story. But the Atlas Space Operations Center, the ASOC, kind of a home, the launch control center, a VIP center and all of that. And the media were invited in very early on to watch a launch from there after the place was open. And something happened that I'll never forget for the rest of my career. And I'll tell you the rest of the story right after we take this break. It is time for our 5-minute built and hold here at the bottom of the hour. We're going to get you caught up on the latest news, weather, and sports on this wild card weekend of the NFL. We'll talk about that more in a moment. And we'll continue our chatting with Adrian Lafitte from Lockheed Martin, retired recently, Atlas Launch Director. I'm Jim Benck. You are listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB. Indeed, welcome back to our second half of Space Talk on WMMB. The phone lines are open. The online inbox available also for your questions or comments. The phone number 321-768-1240. The email address is spacetalking@AOL.com. We're joined today by my good friend Adrian Lafitte, recently retired from Lockheed Martin, a former Atlas launch director. And Adrian, we're talking about your career here flying the Atlas launch vehicle from the Cape. And back in the days of the Atlas II, Atlas III, as you were getting ready for the Atlas V, you built this Atlas Space Operations Center, a brand-new facility that contained both the Launch Operations Center and some offices and customer support and all that, but also a VIP area where people could come and watch the launch and enjoy some snacks and some finger food and be plugged in while being very comfortable. And there were these various support rooms that you set up for the customer. And on one occasion, they brought the press in, and I was fortunate to be there. It was very early. It may have been the first or second launch. And we're sitting in the room enjoying our coverage and working hard on our stories and all that. And we're probably about 10 minutes from launch, something like that. It was very close. I know we were in the final built
and
hold.
Yeah, it was in the final built and hold, yeah.
And who walks in but the Atlas launch director, Adrian Lafitte. We are like 10, 15 minutes away from launch, and you walk in calmly, and you say, how's it going? You gotten everything you need? What's going on? Hey, we're looking good for launch. We look so relaxed, so quiet, so calm. Incredible, first of all, and it's a great testament to your personality and the way you handle things. But how can you stay calm like that when you're responsible for this launch vehicle, millions of dollars, people's livelihoods? The pressure must be something incredible. And I don't know how you guys like Cy Baker, Bob Seek, Mike Linebach, I don't know how you do it.
I think what it really boils down to is you're surrounded by a team of excellent professionals. Each person is dedicated to make sure that launch is going to happen successfully, and you feel so comfortable with your team and the people that work for you that you're kind of like, you're like the one making sure that everybody's doing their stuff, but you also trust them. And I remember the biggest thing I felt that I had to do was to make sure that you keep a calm attitude as little panics were happening.
Right.
And then that way, the team knew that you were focused towards your goal, which is to launch successful. And the hardest part was always, if you had an issue, to make that call, especially to a customer that says, sorry, but we're not going to go today. And back in those days, we were doing a lot of commercial launches.
Mm-hmm.
And the commercial guy was just looking and said, the sooner I get up in space, the sooner I start making money. And to tell him that you're not going to go that day, in his mind, he was starting to lose money.
Yeah.
And the pressure. Yeah, and the pressure was the like, I don't care what the problem is. Yeah, the launch fever, and always trying to keep that calm. So
I know on the NASA side, we've seen a lot of stories and examples of how they simulate missions and launch countdowns in the Sim Soups and the guys with their magic light pens throwing all these problems at everybody. And, of course, the shuttle team does the terminal countdown demonstration test, very visible because the astronauts are involved. You, I would imagine, do some of the same kind of things during a typical
We always had a wet dress rehearsal in which we took it all the way up to the countdown except for the launch part. And I think that's like you exercise all your team in that way.
Right.
And like I said, and back in those days, we were launching pretty frequent. And I think it's sort of like the more you do it, the more experience you get. And I think that also gave you that attitude that you knew you had a good team and then you're going to do that successfully.
The Atlas has been, and we always hate to talk about this in the business because we don't want to jinx anything.
Yeah.
Atlas has had such a successful run. Atlas V, Atlas III, Atlas II. I mean, just incredible. Do we know what we're doing? Or are we still learning something every time? Are we lucky? How would you characterize all that?
I think it's the real reason we know what we're doing, but like we always said to the launch team is, the last vehicle doesn't remember what it did last time.
Right.
So each one is the first launch, like one at a time. Yeah, we're proud of the record, and you look at that as a good record, but the rocket on the pad does not remember what the other rocket did the prior launch. So you always want to make sure that the team remains sharp to make sure that they don't get complacent.
What are your thoughts on using Atlas to carry humans again?
I think it's doable. It's one of the things that we have looked in the past. What we got to do is to make sure you make it, you know, do the redundancies in the system to man rate the Atlas V. And I think it's something that probably we may see in the future.
Yeah, that would be something incredible. You think you'll at Launch Complex 41, you have one vertical integration facility to build the rocket up and roll it out to the pad. The area has room for a second vertical integration facility, so you could process two rockets at the same time rolling out the same pad. There is talk about at Launch Complex 39B, the shuttle launch pad, being able to configure various mobile launcher platforms to handle different rockets, Atlas V among them being not planned for, but certainly as we talk in the hallways, you know, it's an option. What do you think about all that? Is there a bright future for Atlas V? Do we need more facilities?
I think if the market starts driving where you have a need to launch more than what we're currently launching, the launch rate right now, I don't think demands to build another vertical integration facility. But if it did, the original concept of the Atlas V was to have two vertical integration facility that would allow you to launch up to 19 a year, if I remember back.
Which would be incredible.
Which would be incredible because basically what you do is you're processing the vehicle in the VIF and you only roll the vehicle to the pad the day of launch.
I know the customers are very important and what they're carrying is very important, but I've never really cared about what's on top of the thing. I just want to see it go.
Yeah.
You know, isn't that some? Adrian Don sends us an email. Now that you are retired, have you considered consulting in the aerospace defense business as many other retirees have? Are you ready to join the ranks of the wise old men, the gray beards of Lee Solid and others?
I think that's probably
Marshall Hurd.
Yeah, that's probably something that's in the future and it's something that I'll definitely pursue. And I think right now I'm trying to finish up my commitments that I have on all that, especially the United Way campaign.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about that in a minute. Yeah,
But definitely something that I will definitely pursue and always do it with good partners. Probably find a good partner and then do something together.
Something different out of the box or something more mainstream that we already...
I would say probably see what's out there. I think there's, in this environment, there's going to be a lot of opportunity for smaller businesses.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of smaller businesses that are trying to move up. And I think that's a good area to go start consulting in those areas.
There's all these crazy, I shouldn't say crazy, but they're different. They're out of the box. Planetary Resources, Strato Launch, even SpaceX. What we call in the business the new space community.
Yeah.
Interested?
I think, you know, even though there's a lot of been, I mean, there's always been the issue that Lockheed doesn't really quite care for SpaceX.
Right.
But on the other hand, you got to give credit to the SpaceX that they have come up a long ways from when they started it. And they also have a system that they can, once they fire the engine, if they have an issue, they can turn it down and then go the same day.
Right.
And if you look at any other launch system, we have never seen that before until then.
Could we with an Atlas V with no solids on board, you start the RD-180, shut it down. Could you physically do it if you didn't have, I mean, is there things that they're committed, hardware committed, that you couldn't retry again an hour later?
I believe the requirement is if you start, then you're down by at least one day.
By at least one day.
Yeah.
Interesting. I know that a lot of times the risk aversion, and you know, we need to go convene a panel and we need to go investigate and spend time covering our butts basically to make sure that we didn't screw up.
Yeah.
That's what's impressed me with SpaceX. Not that they're being loose cannons or anything, but just to be able to have that system in place, that technology in place, as you can start it, light it. And as we saw with the Falcon 1, that's when I first got impressed with them. This was a launch attempt in Kwajalein. They fired the engine. It aborted. They looked at the problem, figured out what it was, solved it, topped off the tanks, and started and flew successfully. Yeah. Well, more or less successful.
Successful, yeah.
You talked about the United Way. We've talked about your passion for space education in some of our remaining moments here. Talk about why is that so important, Adrian? You know, I've seen it firsthand. I know you're absolutely personally committed to this. Why do we need to worry about the future?
Well, I think if you see what's happening in this country is we're not producing what we call the STEM kids of the future. And it's not just necessary engineers. You're talking engineering technicians, the people that work on the science and the research. And to me, that's why, like you mentioned earlier, I'm very involved with the Maritime High School at Da Vinci Academy. And I'm really proud that those kids are in the process of building a satellite that hopefully is going to launch next year on an Atlas V. Brevard Space Week, which is also trying to get the kids involved earlier, I think this year we added a lot of more of the hands-on experience, and I think we had one of the best space weeks that we had in 10 years.
And Brevard Space Weeks, every sixth grader in the county gets to go to the Kennedy Space Center Visitor Complex for a day.
And
free.
Obviously, as you know, the National Space Club has been very committed to that, and we have donated, this year we donated $40,000, raised $40,000 for that effort. And given the condition and what's happening now with the schools, it's going to become more critical that we keep supporting those efforts like that. We also are trying to expand the Space Week to other counties.
Yeah, I think that's a real interesting idea.
Yeah, the Lieutenant Governor, last time she was a speaker at the Space Club, she came and specifically said we would like to do that. And to that effect, we have a recruiter organization called the Florida After School Network. And they're helping us to see how we can expand that program to other counties. And also maybe get involved with some of the serial robotics program.
Oh, I think the robotics thing is another great opportunity that we have that we don't take fully advantage of here or don't give enough visibility to. Adrian, thanks. Stand by. We're going to take our final break of the day. When we come back, we'll wrap up our chat with Adrian. We'll also take a look at the weekly launch forecast and pose our questions in terminal count to Adrian, find out what's on his mind about some of our favorite things we'd like to know about. Please stay tuned. I'm Jim Bank. You're listening to Space Talk right here on WMMB. And welcome back, everyone, as we begin our final segment of today's edition of Space Talk. Your weekly reminder that you can stay in touch with us online throughout the week using some of our more popular social media opportunities. Your first stop, of course, on the web, WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, where you can find links to an archive of past Space Talk shows and a lot of other information. You can also follow us online with Twitter at Space Talking, and there is a Space Talk page as well on Facebook that we certainly invite you to take a look at and like. Add to your list of goodies online. Okay, let's take a look at our local launch forecast. And coincidentally enough, as we've been talking with Adrian Lafitte here today about the Atlas rocket this hour, the next launch targeted to fly is, in fact, an Atlas V rocket carrying NASA's newest tracking and data relay system communication satellite. The TDRS system, absolutely critical to NASA's ability to control, maintain, command, all of those things having to do with the International Space Station, the Hubble Space Telescope, all of its resources in Earth orbit. The Tedra system goes way back to the early days of the shuttle program and has been flying on an Atlas as well, Atlas V, and shuttle for these many years. Liftoff from Complex 41 at Cape Canaveral Air Force Station, now set for 8:52 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on January 29th, 14 days away from right now. The launch window extends until 9:32 in the evening. Again, the launch time 8:52 to 9:32. United Launch Alliance team started stacking the booster at Complex 41 this past week. The first stage was delivered, raised into position within the vertical integration facility at Complex 41 that we were just talking about. The second stage and spacecraft will follow during the next couple of weeks, with all that work leading up to rolling the Atlas V out to its launch pad the day before the shot is scheduled. For more information about these and all the various other launches scheduled around the world, jump on the web to WMMBAM.com, keyword Space Talk, and look for the link to our launch forecast. You'll see some links there that will be very helpful to you, not the least of which is the one from SpaceFlightNow.com, our good friend Justin Ray. Yeah, Adrian, Justin grew up with you on the Atlas. He's been a great follower of the unmanned launch vehicles and all that. Got any fun Justin Ray stories to tell?
Well, one of the things I think that it was kind of interesting, I always thought that Justin will remember everything, and right about the time we were heading towards the 10th anniversary of the first Atlas V,
yeah,
I sent Justin a note saying, hey, Justin, remember what today is? And I thought he was going to be like, right, Johnny on the spot. And he goes, no. And I go, oh. And then he goes, wow, boy, I can't believe it's been 10 years.
And then you guilted him into it because, boy, did he write a bunch of stuff about it. Justin Ray is one of my favorite stories. I really do need to spend – I need to get him on the air.
You do.
You know, because he's like my fourth son in a way, you know, and there's a great story to tell about him. Real quick, before we do terminal count, which is a couple moments here, the Atlas V, I'm so impressed. You're starting to stack. They started stacking it this past week. Launch is 2 weeks from now. I mean, in the old days, it would seem like a rocket would take forever to be built up and processed and launched, and now you're basically delivering the hardware to the pad in the area within a couple weeks of launch. How did we ever get to that?
Well, I think that was by design. When we first started looking at the Atlas V, as we looked at what are the things that take time for us to be able to increase our launch manifest and launch them quicker. And what we said, we had to minimize the amount of time the vehicle spends on the time, hence the clean pad concept.
Yeah.
Technically, the vehicle's only on the pad a day, the day of launch. The meantime, you can do all the processing in the vehicle integration facility, and we limit making a lot of changes to the design. We were able to minimize some of the stuff we used to do.
Yeah, it's so incredible how fast we're moving. Okay, Adrian, time for terminal count.
Okay.
Our feature at the end of the Space Talk, in which we ask five simple questions of our guests to get to know them a little better. Adrian, this is not a quiz. There are no right or wrong answers, and this is not a contest. So all of you at home, please, no wagering. All right, this is if we hear any other word out of your mouth for this first one, I'm going to be just dead on the floor right now. Coolest rocket.
Atlas.
Atlas V? Atlas
Actually,
2AS?
I think the whole family.
The whole family?
Yeah, because, I mean, it's been an evolution from the 2 to the 3 to the 5.
Spoken like a true parent. Can't name his favorite kid, right?
You can't.
Yeah. First launch you saw or remember?
My first launch as a launch director. That has to be the one that I always will remember.
Remember the most. Do you remember what your first launch was, though? I mean,
EchoStar.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
It was Charlie Ergen and Dish Network.
Wow, that's great.
I'll never forget that.
That's great. Well, okay, my most prized space memorabilia.
I have to say, and it's kind of weird, and we were talking about it earlier, my Divas Award.
Yeah?
Yeah. And that meant a lot because it's kind of like you finally got recognized by the community that you have actually accomplished something.
One of my most favorite memories, of course, you honored me. I got to MC that event, and the greatest thing that happened was when you accepted your award and you gave your speech, and you went back to sit down at your table, and you forgot your award up at the podium.
And my son came down, and he was dressed in a tuxedo. I'll never forget that. And he brought it to me.
That's right.
I will never forget that.
I called him up to the stage, mm-hmm. handed it to him, and he handed it to you, and the crowd went crazy.
Yep.
And one of the most – and there's a picture, which I know you have.
Yeah.
Just the best One of the best memories I've had in my whole career was so that was what a great night. Best space TV series or movie?
Lost in Space.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Always loved that program. Warning, 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 warning.
That's a little unexpected. You know, no one's ever said that before.
Yeah, I guess I grew up in Puerto Rico, and I used to watch that show back then in Puerto Rico. So that's always remember that.
Oh, that's Puerto Rico. Isn't that where they did the Flying Nun?
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Was that a favorite one, too?
No.
Not really. That
not that one. Lost in Space.
Okay, Moon, Mars, or beyond?
I think we have to go to Mars and beyond.
Mars and beyond, yeah. Absolutely. Hey, Adrian, we're running out of time. Thank you so much for being on the program today. I appreciate it. We'll be in touch with you, obviously, in the many, many weeks.
And good luck to your Vikings.
Well, as a matter of fact, I restrained myself until the very end of the program to talk about this, what's actually the most important topic of the day. My Minnesota Vikings made the playoffs and will be facing the Green Bay Packers at Lambeau Field tonight at 8:30 p.m. We beat the Packers last week. And with another strong showing from Adrian Peterson and Christian Ponder, we should have a fair shot at duplicating last week's welcome victory against those cheese heads. In any case, I am, as I learned to say, hanging out around NASA folks, cautiously optimistic. Of course, as always, I will watch the game tonight, reminding myself that it doesn't matter who wins or loses, so long as the food is served hot and the drinks are served cold. Well, that's it for now. Space Talk is a production of Mila Solutions, and as we've said, is brought to you thanks to the generous help of our supporting sponsors, Space Florida, Boeing, Abacus Technology, SpaceX, United Launch Alliance, and Lockheed Martin. Would certainly welcome your comments at spacetalking@AOL.com, thanking our sponsors for their contributions to the program. My thanks also today to Sean Williams for returning from his holiday break and manning the ops station for today's program. He survived his trip out west to Las Vegas. Still has some money in his pockets. Please join us next Saturday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for another hour of Space Talk. Stay tuned now as WMMB presents a weekend edition of the Glenn Beck Program. Go Big Purple. I'm Jim Behnke, and we'll talk to you again real soon.